cannot even explain to you.
And I did that, even though that sounded sassy when I just said it.
Yeah. Okay. Welcome, everyone. Today is April 15th, Tax Day 2015. I welcome you to the... Yes, Ryan, we're going to be talking about tax credits. I welcome you to the House Committee on Human Services and Housing. And before we get into the bills, I wanted to just pick up where we left off on Monday. We had a conversation questioning what the process was for tax credits. Some people were a little concerned that I had not posted work sessions for certain bills that I had intended to sunset. And I wanted to just, I went back to Community Services, wanted to make sure that I was following the process correctly. And I wanted to just review that with you all, both because the tax credit process is fairly new still. No legislators have been through it many times. For many of us, this is the first time. And on this committee, most of the members are new. My committee administrator is new. I'm a new chair. My vice chairs are new. And so we're all learning together. And I just wanted to make sure, both for the committee's sake, but also anyone in the audience who may have listened or anyone online who may have been listening, I do want to make sure as we go forward that we're really clear about the process. So several things. One is the tax credits expiring in 2016. That was a really huge report that Chris Allenuck's operations put forward to us. It was something like 100 pages. And on pages 7 and 8, it lays out what the process is. Page 8 talks about what the policy committees recommend, you know, what their work is. And at a further point in time, this was developed, the tax credit committee policy questions. The policy questions came at the end of that report. It was the same kind of information that was in that report was laid out in a more visual term. And that's in OLIS, it's been put under Chris Allenuck's questions. On the second page of that, it talks about the policy committee process. And basically, after reviewing the goal, we decide on action. We can do a simple extension, referring the bill to the Joint Tax Credit Committee, or we can do an extension with modifications, amend the bill, and then send it to the Joint Tax Credit, or we can allow the credit to sunset, and that means take no action on the bill, which is what we did where there was some concern, or we can replace an existing credit with a new, more effective credit, and then refer it to the Joint Tax Committee. So that is the job of the Policy Committee. There was some question about whether, in fact, that is what has been happening or what we've been doing. This is the third round of looking at all the tax credits. The legislation was passed in 2009 to put a six-year sunset on all tax credits to give us the opportunity to look at the policy as well as the money that's going out the door. And so this is now our third cycle out of three. And so, again, in OLIS and for the committee in front of you is in OLIS, it's under Chris Allenuck History. It goes over the 2011, 2013, and to date, 2015 legislature, and it talks about which of the bills on the House side and on the Senate side may not have made it out of the policy committee because in the review process it was decided that wasn't going to go on. In some of those cases, it may have had work sessions. In some of the cases, I know it didn't have work sessions. The one in 2015, most recently in the Veterans Committee, which three members of this committee are on, both in the House and the Senate, it was decided that there would they would sunset it. There was not a work session on it. If you go to the third piece here, it's the Senate version of that. I don't believe the House version has done that. It was the Committee on Veterans and Emergency Preparedness. It's the TRICARE for healthcare providers. So those sunsetted both in your House committee as well as in the healthcare committee. They did not go on to the tax joint. And just so you know for process, what will happen for us on each of the bills, the ones that we are sunsetting out of our committee because they did not get scheduled for a work session, they will get this kind of thing, which is the memo from Boquist to the co-chairs of the Joint Tax Credit Committee explaining why. And the ones that are being recommended will also have something, but obviously they will say why what we're recommending. So are there, I just wanted to clarify the process. I think we did follow the process. I understand why there was some confusion around it. I want to make sure that going forward there's some clarity. Any feelings about some of the, and then I'll just say in terms of each of the different ones that we reviewed, I went back and checked, what I had said publicly on March 9th and other times. March 9th was the most specific. At that point, we first looked at the tax credits on February 6th, so that was 5 weeks into starting to look at them, and it was becoming very clear from the work group that I had that that certain ones were recommended for sunsetting, and so I did state that. And what I would encourage from now on is, when I say, look, this is the recommendation that I, as chair, given that I'm overseeing this work group, if there's concern, please, please, please come to me or come to the vice chairs. And the other thing going forward that is my recommendation is that, we're all human. And so on that last day, on Friday, we posted all the work sessions, and there was one that we didn't think advocates actually wanted to be scheduled for a work session. I think you might even be in the room. I'm not sure. And so we had a public hearing and not a work session planned, and we scrambled at 4 o'clock to make sure we made that 5 o'clock deadline. So the other thing is, as committee members, if you're concerned that a bill that you cared about that maybe you've talked to me about, or maybe you haven't talked to me about, or maybe I spaced out on it, is not scheduled for a work session, that's your other opportunity to make sure, why is this not scheduled for a work session? So I don't want to belabor the point. I just wanted to make sure for the record that we're all clear as a committee, and that people out in the audience might be clear as well.
Rep. Evans had
a... Thank you. I appreciate that. And I might have jumped, Paul. Sorry. The thing I appreciate is that you do have a policy and you were working from it. I think the bigger conversation for us, not in this committee but in a bigger forum, is not taking up or down votes on existing policy a good way to do that, because I think we are sunsetting some of these things, and by not having that up or down vote, it's tacit approval of this group, and I would not have, like I said before, would not have necessarily agreed on a couple of those, and I would have liked the up or down vote. That is definitely not a you thing. You have instructions. Somebody created those instructions. I think that's on me to go figure out who did that. So in future, when we have this in the next 2 years, there'll be some other third of tax credits come up that we address the actual policy of making sure that there are those of us who just don't want to tacitly agree on those things, and be able to have that up or down vote, I think, is important.
Okay. Anyone else? Representative Evans.
Chair, I just want to say thank you for clarifying the policy. You did mention an issue that came before the House Vets Committee, and there was a particular factor related to that TRICARE changed providers along the way, and there's a question right now as to whether the new TRICARE providers knew about the tax. Mm. So I think there's an ongoing conversation that will be talked, it will be kind of an interim discussion about how we make sure that if there are things for veterans specific, mm-hmm. that there's more awareness about some of those tools. So I think that the letter's absolutely true. It is a special case, and since you mentioned it, I just didn't want people to think that we rolled on it.
Right.
The TRICARE thing is a very unique animal.
Right. So more, it was an example of a process that not all of the sons, we don't have an obligation to send everything on. And in fact, Representative Barnhart had said, please, cut down the number that we have. And so I was trying very hard to follow process, and I'm sorry if that wasn't as clear as it could have been. And I just want to also thank the members of the work group who worked on the tax credits with me. I'll just mention some of them. Not everyone signed in every time, but John Mullen from the Oregon Law Center, Bobby Weber from OSU Child Care, Andrea Peluso from Family Forward, Bob Junda from Disability Rights, Deanna Mack from Department of Revenue, Chris Alanak from Legislative Revenue Office, Chuck Shekotoff from Oregon Center for Public Policy, David Mendel from the Early Learning Division, Eva Ripito, AFSCME, Leslie Sutton from Oregon Council on Developmental Disabilities, James Barter from Children First, Matt Swanson from SEIU, Matt Germer from the Senate Committee Services. That was on behalf of the Senate committee, that workforce committee that was also looking at some of these. Matt Noel Ching, Partners for Hungry Free Oregon, Representative Bueller and his staff, Representative Dembro, John Taponia from Eco Northwest, Tyler McGinnis from Oregon Center for Public Policy, Patty Whitney Wise, Partners for Hunger Free Oregon, Dorothy Spence from the Speaker's Office. I know there were some Oregon Business Council people, Ellen Lowe, I think Mike Olson from HISCO came to one of them. So there's some other names that I know or that also. So I just want to thank everyone on the committee. And when I said something at the last meeting about, well, the chair does have the prerogative, you know, I take that very lightly. And I think that I probably failed to mention that the reason I was bringing these recommendations forward is because I had been checking in with a group of people that included business people, child care advocates, disability advocates, senior advocates. I think John Bartholomew from AARP was at those as well. And so as we go forward and vote on these things, I do want to reiterate that there was a lot of input into these tax credits, and I am not trying to grab chair's prerogative and put what I want for it. So I think that's all I want to say about it, but hopefully we'll get on to the tax credits. So everyone fine with that? Okay, thank you. So I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2068. Robin, could you please summarize the bill?
Sure.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2068 increases allowable earned income credit equal to federal credit for taxpayers with children less than age three, applies to tax years beginning on or after January 1st, 2016 through January 1st, 2020, takes effect on the 91st day following signee die. There is a dash to amendment that increases the allowable earned income tax credit to 14% of the federal credit for taxpayers with children less than age two. And there is a subsequent referral to the Joint Tax Committee. Yep, and it's in just a not to spoil the surprise, but we will rescind that referral and add a referral to the Revenue Committee, which is reflected in the motions group.
Okay, great. So just to summarize this is the increase in EITC for families with children 0 to 1. And that was partly in recognition that while we're trying to help low-income families who are dealing with very young children, and they can either put them in child care, and so the child care tax credits deal with that, or they might choose to stay home and take care of very young children, and in that case usually suffer a loss of income. And so it was in recognition that if we're going to support young families, let's do it and give them some choice in how they do that and support them either way. This is also based on some really good research by Duncan and others that is on OLIS from when we first heard this bill about how one of the best strategies you can do is actually to double the EITC. The EITC credit, the Oregon credit right now is 8%. This would increase it to 14%. It doesn't entirely double it, but it goes in that direction. And I think for all of the bills that we're going to be hearing, there are light fiscals and light.
Yeah, the revenue, Madam Chair, thank you for the reminder. The fiscal impacts have been, the fiscal and revenue impacts have been issued, and they're lights, and they're available on OLIS.
This one?
Two.
Do you want to do this one?
Get ready for a motion.
Can we unpause for a moment?
Yes, we're going to stand at ease.
Thank you.
Bill 2068.
Chair Kenny Geyer, I move to adopt the dash 2 amendments dated 4/8/15.
Vice Chair Stark moves to adopt the dash 2 amendments dated 4/8/15. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? If not, the amendments are adopted. Thank you.
Chair Kenny Geyer, I move House Bill 2068 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the subsequent referral to the Joint Tax Committee by prior reference be rescinded, and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Revenue.
Vice Chair Stark moves House Bill 2068 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the subsequent referral to the Joint Tax Committee by prior reference be rescinded, and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Revenue. Discussion. Well, that is because this is not something that's sunsetted. Any tax credit that's being sunsetted goes to the Joint Tax Credit Committee. This is, even though we have a tax credit out there that we re-upped 2 years ago and it sunsets in 4 years, this is considered a new tax credit. And I know some people have wondered, given it's a new tax credit, Do we have that much? It would be $7 million for the next year, the last year of the biennium. That would actually make it $14 million. So I want to highlight that and put that on the record. That's one of those things that the tax credit committee is going to have to look at, how much they have in tax credits.
Okay. The revenue committee.
I'm still stuck on the tax credit. Okay, so any further discussion? All right. Clerk, could you please call the roll?
Rep. Mueller?
Yes.
Rep. Evans?
Excused.
Rep. Gallegos?
Yes.
Rep. Hayden?
Yes.
Rep. Parrish?
Aye.
Rep. Taylor?
Aye.
Vice Chair Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Calusa?
Aye.
Chair Tingar?
Aye. The motion passes. The bill is sent to the floor. Would anyone like to carry this?
No. Pardon me, Madam
Oh,
Chair.
Sorry.
My apologies.
I'm so excited.
No,
okay. All right. Never mind. It's going to revenue. Okay.
Going to revenue.
I'm closing the works. Oh.
Madam Chair.
Oh.
Aye.
Yes.
Do we even
there you go. You're not officially closed.
She didn't quite hit the gavel.
So I hadn't hit the gavel. Her. Perfect.
SEIs. Sorry.
Okay. Any question, Representative Stark?
No, he was going
to We don't actually have to suspend rules because we haven't closed.
So we're aye.
Okay.
Yeah, we voted. All right. I'm closing the work session on 2068-2. Thank you. And I'm going to open the work session on House Bill 2113. Robin, could you please give us a summary?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2113 extends tax credit sunset for Office of Child Care contributions from 2016 to 2022. There is a -2 amendment pending, allows the Office of Child Care to issue tax credit certificates equaling $2.5 million, sets effective date on Section 2 of Bill January 1st, 2016, takes effect 91st day following adjournment, sine die, and the revenue and fiscal impact statements have been issued. There is a subsequent referral to the Joint Tax Committee.
Chair. Well, okay, go ahead, do the motion, then we'll
Chair talk. Kenny Geyer, I move to adopt the -2 amendments dated 4-9 of 2015.
Vice Chair Peluso moves to adopt the -2 amendments dated 4-9-15. Is there any discussion? So this is a bill that we had testimony on, didn't go into great detail because it's actually the one that the Human Services and Early Childhood Committee in the Senate took more time on. It does increase the credit allowable for the Office of Child Care for its child care quality and incentive grants. It has some policy recommendations as well, and we're just supporting what the Senate has done. Any further discussion? Okay. Are there any objections to the amendment? If no, the amendment passes. The amendments are adopted.
Chair Kenny Geyer, I move House Bill 2113 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Tax Credit by prior reference.
Vice Chair Peluso moves House Bill 2113 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Joint Committee on Tax Credits by prior reference. Is there any discussion? No? Okay, Clerk, please call the roll. Excused.
Rep.
Evans? Aye.
Rep. Gallegos?
Aye.
Rep. Hayden?
Aye.
Rep. Parrish?
Aye.
Rep. Taylor?
Aye.
Vice Chair Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Palooza?
Aye.
Chair Tingar?
Aye. The motion passes. Okay, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2113. Open a work session on 2116. It's the big one. Robin, please summarize the bill.
Sure. Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2116 extends sunset for child independent care credit for expenses for household independent care services necessary for gainful employment until 2022. There is a -3 amendment pending. It inserts aspects of the working family tax credit into the child independent care credit, caps the credit for employment-related expenses, applies credit as expression of relationship of adjusted gross income to federal poverty level with consideration for family size, allows credit to be refundable, applies to tax years beginning on January 1, 2016 through January 1, 2022, takes effect on the 91st day after sine die. That paperwork has been issued, and there is a subsequent referral to the Joint Tax Committee. What does it mean that this dash 3 is pending? Oh, that we need to adopt it.
Oh.
Madam Chair.
I wasn't here.
No, it's okay.
Let's have a motion and then we'll discuss it.
Yes, Chair Kinnegar, I move to adopt the dash 3 amendments dated 4/13/15.
Vice Chair Stark moves to adopt the dash 3 amendments dated 4/13/15. Is there any discussion? This is the really big one. This is the one that's the child independent care. It goes for child care up to kids up to age 13, and then it also includes anyone over 13 who is incapacitated. So it combines working family and child independent care. It's called the working family child independent care refundable. It also lifts the caps so that in the former child independent care, the caps were $3,000 for one dependent, $6,000 for two. And in the working family, there was no cap on expense. So this one is somewhere in between. It's a $12,000 cap for one dependent that was based partially on what you could buy in child care at the 75th percentile based on research that Bobby Weber from OSU has done, which was actually a bit higher than $1,000 a month, but that would be for infant care. So we took something a little less than that. The savings that could come out of this from DOR, they want me to make sure that it's clear, whereas originally I said one of the big benefits of putting these two things together is that there could be lots of savings because the working family credit costs $500,000 a year for four DOR people. They don't know what this will cost. To the extent that people's expenses are under the $3,000 and $6,000 caps, we can leave that to the federal IRS. So there should be savings with that population. To the extent that there are people that are above those caps, then it would be on us. So, I think that there will still be, I see Deanna nodding. So there may be some savings. We won't really know until we see what comes in. I do think another benefit, though, is that on the chart that we put on OLIS a couple days ago, you can see what the federal CDC, what the Oregon CDC, and what the Oregon Working Family tax credits, and you could actually see, what people at different income levels could get. And by lining them up, because they go up dramatically and down dramatically on the federal, we can soften that umbrella. We can have people gradually, as they start working, and it complements TANF because TANF ends at 37% of federal poverty. So as you start being able to get back into the workforce, it supports you, and the more you work, the better your credit gets, and then it levels out and it comes back down. We could go into greater detail about the phase out. Any other piece of it that you want to discuss before voting on it?
So yes, thank you. So I do still. This is the one I do have heartburn with, and it's. Ties to the one that we didn't vote on, because I do think that hit to the families that are sort of in that 60 to 70,000 range, and that really is like heart of the middle class for me. And I've had written really big checks for daycare, stunningly big checks for daycare, and I know exactly how expensive that is. And so to take somebody who's just slightly over that 60,000 threshold and say there's no deduction for you doesn't feel good to me. I get that we have to prioritize funding, but that is not a prioritization or where I would like to make a prioritization. So I did not draft an amendment for this because I sort of have to wrap my head around what that would look like. And can certainly draft one for when it moves forward. So I'm going to be a no on this bill today as it is, as it's written, and will certainly reserve my right to change my vote on the floor because I am a firm believer in this type of subsidy for families who are working on, trying to pull themselves up out of poverty, move through the middle class, and actually get to upward mobility, and this helps them get there. So to take that layer of someone in that $60,000 to $70,000 range and say you don't get this anymore, I'd like to know exactly how many families we think that affects, and that data I've not seen that, or if it's on OLIS somewhere I've missed it, but I would like to see how many that is, because I think it's a lot of families, and so I'm not comfortable with giving those people a haircut on their taxes on tax day, and saying that's a group of people that we're going to cut out of a daycare credit like this.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. I appreciate all the work that you've done, and all I know Rep. Bueller and all the people and part of the work group to come up with an effective way to streamline these, to make them work. A hurdle, I am going to be a yes on this. A hurdle that I personally had to overcome with this is taking it from not refundable to refundable. And for me, a basic principle of tax credits, and we've talked about this, a basic principle of tax credits, I believe, is in order to reduce someone's tax burden, not to take someone else's taxes and pay for something for someone else. So that's an underlying, but overall, I like what it's doing. I like the work that it's, you know, the people it's going to be helping, the way it's going to help people. And so I am going to be a yes, but there is a hurdle there for me to overcome. But I appreciate the work that you guys have put into this.
So a couple of things, just again, channeling the work group's comments on this. We also struggled, and had we had more money, we would have loved to have seen this support go to more middle-class families. I think your sentiment is widely shared. We ended up, this cost about, I think, $3.8 million more per biennium. We didn't want to blow it out of the water. Part of that was making it refundable. The working family child care credit had been refundable, and the other one was a credit that could go forward 5 years if you didn't have a tax liability. So again, that was trying to mold those two together and really trying to say, if someone is in TANF and they're getting a $506 a month, it's really hard for them to actually start paying for child care, and so let's give them a little support, but let's really make sure at 40% when they lose their TANF that we continue to give them support. And so because they don't have enough of a tax liability, that's the way that we can support them in child care. That was part of where the increase was. The getting back to the phase out, the working family phased out at 250%. The child independent care phased out on a federal taxable income of $45,000, and that's different when you translate it into federal poverty line. You know, the charts that you saw was for a family of three, and it was around $60,000 is the 300% where we phased it out. The more kids you add to that, the more your income can come up while in your poverty. So for a family of four, at 300%, their income is going to be even higher, and yet they qualify, right? Am I saying this right? And so you know, a family of five, you might be up at $70,000. But that's why we were trying to balance out. It's hard to say, you know, 300% is a different income level for different size families. And we were starting with a pretty small family, actually, so that's probably one of the lower, other than a family of two. But, you know, the bigger your family gets, the more your income's going to be.
The follow-up for that for me would be, if you're a single mom with two kids at $60,000, a little over $60,000, and you've got a $12,000 daycare bill, I mean, that's 20% of your income.
Right.
That's more than some people pay
right.
for housing.
Right.
So for me to say you don't get a tax credit
right.
And you are in this population of people is right. just... it just personally doesn't line up with
right.
where I am philosophically
right.
on... and particularly for people who are working, and even at $60,000, particularly if she doesn't own a home and she's taking the standard income tax deduction, she is paying a pretty hefty tax amount, I think,
yep.
Because the only credits that she is entitled to at that point is anything like student loan deductions, you know, a few other Schedule A type things that she could possibly qualify for, the standard deduction, and not much else. So her tax liability in an income tax state where we know we have this problem with the lower portion of income being taxed, and that hits families, you know, that suddenly she's up in the 9% range. It's a big hit. Big hit.
Yeah. I totally agree with the sentiment. And the federal CDC actually continues at 20%. All the way. It's mm-hmm. not means tested at all. You could be making $5 million and you still get 20% of your expenses, up to $3,000 for one, up to $6,000. So there is a little bit of relief, but I appreciate the sentiment. Representative.
Thank you, Chair Kindergartner. I will support the bill. I do have some reservations. I would look forward to some amendments on this. My concern is of cash flow mm-hmm. and that our Department of Revenue in the state of Oregon is taking cash flow out of very, very poor families' pockets and holding that for 12 or more months, depending on when they get their filing back. And I'm very concerned about that, because the idea is to help improve child care to poor families below the poverty line. Well, I support that. I don't support the state holding that revenue. And so I'm working on, and I think we do have some support on another tax credit on a pilot project. But I would look forward to an amendment in the future before the sunset of this to get the money that those taxpayers pay back to their pocket on a monthly basis.
Representative Hayden, I really appreciate your leadership on that. You brought that up on the very first day. You drafted and worked very closely with, I believe it was Department of Revenue, on coming up with that. I know there are at least two of us on this committee that have signed on to that bill. And again, I appreciate the sentiment, and I think we're making huge progress coming out of this committee on some of these issues for working families. So, all right. Any other discussion? Okay. Seeing none, still need a motion on the bill, I guess.
This was discussion on adopting the Dash 3 amendment.
Okay, so no, is there any further discussion on the amendments? Any objection? The amendments are adopted.
Chair Kenny Geyer, I move House Bill 2116 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Tax Committee by prior reference.
Vice Chair Stark moves House Bill 2116 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Joint Tax Committee by prior reference. Is there a discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll, please.
Mueller?
Excused.
Yes.
Rick
yes.
Rick
yes.
Rick
no.
Rep Taylor?
Aye.
Vice Chair Stark?
Aye.
Vice Chair Peluso?
Aye.
Chair
Pingar? Aye. The motion passes. I'm going to close the work session on 2116, open a work session on 2119. Robin, could you please summarize the bill?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2119 extends personal exemption credit for severe disability from 2016 to 2022. There's a Dash 3 amendment that caps the adjusted gross income for households claiming the credit at $100,000. Enact Section 2 to tax years beginning January 1st, 2016. Takes effect on the 91st day after adjournment, sine die. There is a fiscal and revenue light statement that will move, and there is a subsequent referral to the Joint Tax Committee.
Chair Kenny Geyer, I move to adopt the Dash 3 amendments dated 4-8 of 15.
Vice Chair Peluso moves to adopt the Dash 3 amendments dated 4-8-15. Is there any discussion? So just as a reminder, this is the severe disability, a personal exemption that is indexed, so it goes over time, and the amendment does include capping it at $100,000 per filer. Okay. Any further discussion or questions? Nope. Okay. Motion on the bill? Amendments are adopted.
No. Yeah.
Okay. Just trying to plow through it. Okay.
So, Chair Kenny Geyer, I move House Bill 2119 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Tax Credits by prior reference.
Vice Chair Peluso moves House Bill 2119 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Joint Committee on Tax Credits by prior reference. Is there any further discussion? Representative Hayden.
Thank you, Chair Kenny Geyer. One thing that didn't get included, and I know we've had that discussion, but there was another tax credit that I tried to put an amendment on this bill because of the relating clause. I wasn't able to, and that is disability if you have multiple loss of arms or legs, which would be an additional tax credit. I see that as a tax credit not specifically for, but very beneficial to our veterans. And so I was able to work with legislative counsel. That particular tax credit is still alive on the Senate side, and we have put in an amendment to index that tax credit and hopefully keep it alive. I'd like to get support on that. So we might be able to keep one.
Any other comments on that? And I think I've expressed my personal opinion, which reflects at least some of the opinions given in the work group, that as sympathetic as I am to that particular disability and to veterans, there's also veterans who come back with traumatic brain injuries and a whole variety of disabling conditions. And so from a policy point of view, I've not been in favor of that, but you certainly deserve the...
Thank you.
You know, you have the right to carry on with that. So, okay, any further discussion? Okay. Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Rev. Euler?
Oh, excused.
Rev.
Yes.
Rev.
Yes.
Rev.
Yes.
Rev. Perry?
Yes.
Rev. Taylor?
Aye.
Vice Chair Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Palooza?
Aye.
Aye. The motion passes. Close the work session on House Bill 2119. Open a work session on 2122. Can you please summarize the bill?
Certainly, Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2122 extends the tax credit for a child with a disability from 2016 to 2022. It extends the tax credit for a child with a disability. There is a dash 3 amendment pending that caps the adjusted gross income for households claiming the credit at $100,000. It enacts section 2 of the tax year, section 2 of the bill to tax years beginning January 1, 2016, takes effect on the 91st day following adjournment sine die and extends and adds the years 2016 to 2022 into the bill. We have a fiscal and revenue late statement, and there is a subsequent referral to the Joint Tax Committee.
Vice Chair Stark, would you like to give
Chair
a motion?
Chair Kinnegar, I move to adopt the dash 3 amendment stated 4-8-15.
Vice Chair Stark moves to adopt the dash 3 amendment stated 4-8-15. Is there any discussion? It's very similar to the last one, personal exemption, indexed, capped at 100,000. Okay. Any objections? If no, the amendments are adopted.
Chair Kinnegar, I move House Bill 2122 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Tax Credits by prior reference.
Vice Chair Stark moves House Bill 2122 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Joint Committee on Tax Credits by prior reference. Is there any discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll, please.
Rev. Euler?
Excused.
Rev. Evans?
Yes.
Rev. Gallego?
Yes.
Rev. Hayden?
Yes.
Rev. Parrish?
Aye.
Rev. Taylor?
Aye.
Vice Chair Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Palooza?
Aye.
Chair Kinnegar?
Aye. The motion passes. I close the work session on House Bill 2122. Open a work session on 2239. Could you please summarize the bill, Robin?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2239 creates a tax credit for businesses that hire at-risk or disadvantaged youth, allows certified businesses 25% credit for wages paid to qualifying youth, directs Oregon Department of Revenue to define at-risk youth or disadvantaged youth, directs DOR to adopt rules directing policies and procedures to certify credit eligibility, applies to tax year beginning January 1st, 2015 through January 1st, 2021, takes effect at the 91st day following adjournment sine die. There is a dash 4 amendment pending, defines at-risk youth and adds parameters for tax credit eligibility, adds youth with intellectual and developmental disability to eligible employees, adds definition of youth with intellectual and developmental disabilities, removes rulemaking for certification process. There is a fiscal light and a revenue light statement, and this has a subsequent referral to the revenue committee.
Could you remind us what the fiscal is on this?
Madam Chair, we have a fiscal light that doesn't have a that doesn't have an exact dollar amount indicated. We may have staff in the room that could speak to that.
I know they've been going back and forth and trying to narrow down exactly what the cost is. Last I knew, it was about $7 million a year.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Chris Allenack, Legislative Revenue Office. And it looks like it's going to be in that neighborhood. I'm still collecting information in the amendments that you're about to adopt, I think. It lists 5 or 6 specific categories, and I've been reaching out to those state agencies to get solid numbers on who that populate or what that population is. So that's why there's no number in here, because it's still, I can get a new group of numbers and then it can change still a pretty good bit. But right now it's looking to be in the $5 to $7 million range.
Okay. And the categories again were youth that have been incarcerated, youth on free and reduced lunch, youth with IEPs, and youth with disabilities, as I recall.
And foster care.
Foster care, thank you.
And then the youth authority language It's not, it's the custody of the youth authority, and then there's it references a particular youth, Oregon Youth Authority statute.
Okay.
So there are two pieces there. And that, the youth authority information is the one that I'm still looking to get good information on.
Okay. And it's ages 16 to 18, and another parameter we put was that it had to be at least working 200 hours a year. We were, it started out with something over a certain period of time, but we wanted to make it flexible. It could be more part-time during the school year. It could be more of a summer job. So trying to add flexibility there. Any other questions for Chris? Okay, so may I have a motion?
Thank you. Chair Kinnegar, I move to adopt the Dash 4 amendments dated 4-8-15.
Vice Chair Peluso moves to adopt the Dash 4 amendments dated 4-8-15. Is there any discussion? There's a lot of support for this bill, as I recall. It's Representative Davis's bill.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any objection? If not, the amendments are adopted.
Chair Kenny Geyer, I move House Bill 2239 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Revenue Committee by prior reference.
Vice Chair Peluso moves House Bill 2239 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Revenue Committee by prior reference. Is there any discussion? If not, Clerk, can you please? Sorry, I didn't see you.
Thank you, Chair Kenny Geyer. I've expressed previously that I'm definitely in favor of this bill. I think we need to look more often to the business community to provide opportunities of putting our youth to work and allowing them to be innovative in doing that rather than the state trying to create programs and implement that. At the same time, we have to be careful with bills like this that in so doing, encouraging credits and so forth like this, that we don't put pick winners and losers mm-hmm. in the system. I don't think that this overly does that, mm-hmm. but I think that this is actually a very innovative ways of encouraging the business and the free market to do what they do and put our youth to work. So let's let them have at it.
Okay.
So.
Thank you, Representative Stark. Any further discussion? Clerk, can you please call the roll?
Rep. Mueller.
Excused.
Rep. Evans.
Yes.
Rep. Gallegos.
Aye.
Rep. Hayden.
Aye.
Rep. Parrish.
Aye.
Rep. Taylor.
Aye.
Vice Chair Stark.
Yes.
Vice Chair Peluso.
Aye.
Chair Kinnegar.
Aye. The motion passes. I close the work session on House Bill 2239 and open a work session on House Bill 3317. Can you please summarize the bill, Robin?
Certainly, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3317 directs Oregon State Lottery in coordination with Oregon Liquor Control Commission report to Legislative Assembly on or before October 1st of each even-numbered year on the number and location of video lottery retailers, adds household income, education, achievement, occupational status to the definition of socioeconomic status. There is a Dash 2 amendment pending that adds poverty status, race or ethnicity, eligibility for income support, and unemployment to the definition of socioeconomic status. There is, the paperwork is in order. There's a minimal fiscal impact and no revenue impact, and there is no subsequent referral, so this bill will require a carrier.
Representative Taylor, would you like to say something about the bill?
Thank you, Chair Kinnegar. We have been working on this concept for quite some time with the lottery, and it's just very satisfying that after a long time we have been able to. This seems like such a small move, but yet it's very significant, believe it or not, to be able to start to address where we have the terminals located and to make certain that when we have our lottery terminals out across the state, that we understand where they're located and how they're impacting the neighborhoods. So
thank you for your work on it. We're channeling the former chair, Tomei.
Yes, Representative Tomei, yes.
Okay. Is this up to you now, right?
Is it mine?
Representative Stark? I forget where we are. Would you like to do this, Representative Stark?
Yellow.
Chair Kinnegar, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendments dated 4-10-15.
Vice Chair Stark moves to adopt the Dash 2 amendments dated 4-10-15. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? If not, the amendments are adopted.
Chair Kinnegar, I move House Bill 3317 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Stark moves House Bill 3317 is amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? If not, clerk, please call the roll.
Rep. Bueller?
Yes.
Rep. Evans?
Yes.
Rep. Gallego?
Aye.
Rep. Hayden?
Aye.
Rep. Harris?
Aye.
Rep. Taylor?
Aye.
Vice Chair Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Palooza?
Aye.
Chair Kindergarten?
Aye. The motion passes. And would you like to be the carrier?
I think I would. Thank you very much.
Good. Okay, great.
Chair Kindergarten.
Would someone like to suspend the rules?
Yes, I would. Chair Kindergarten, I move that we suspend the rules in order for Representative Bueller to vote
on
House Bill 2113.
Do we have to do one at a time? Probably.
Yeah.
Okay. Representative Bueller, how would you like to vote?
Yes.
Okay. Do I need to gavel?
Yep.
Okay. Keep going. Suspend the rules.
We suspend them every time. Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah. I move to suspend the rules in order that Representative Bueller can vote on House Bill 2116.
Okay. Is there any objection? I think I forgot that last time. Nope. Seeing none. Representative Bueller, how do you vote?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Great.
Madam Chair, I move to suspend. Am I suspending again?
The rules.
The rules, so that Representative Bueller can vote on House Bill 2111 or 2119. I'm sorry.
Okay, Vice Chair Peluso moves to suspend the rules so that Representative Bueller can vote on 2119. I think I'm getting better each time without a script.
Any objection?
Any objection?
Yeah.
Representative Bueller, how do you vote?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, I move to suspend the rules so that Representative Bueller can vote on House Bill 2122.
Representative Peluso moves to suspend the rules so that Representative Bueller can vote on 2122. Are there any objections?
Comment.
I recommend Representative Bueller come on time.
Madam Chair.
Yes, you may respond.
I was hereby testifying.
How do you vote?
Yes.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I move to suspend the rules so that Representative Bueller can vote on House Bill 2239.
Okay. Vice Chair Peluso moves to suspend the rules so that Representative Bueller can vote on House Bill 2239. Is there any objection? Seeing none, Representative Bueller, how do you vote?
Yes.
Okay.
Busy-wise.
We are busy. Okay. I will now open a public hearing.
One more.
Yes. Oh, he already voted on that. Yes. Oh, okay. Sorry. Oh,
my apologies, Madam Chair.
Here for that one.
I didn't want to.
Oh, okay. Out. Thank you for asking about that.
23.
Where is it?
3318.
That's the one
we carry
over, right?
Yes. Which number is it? Madam Chair, House Bill 3318, the paperwork is not ready, and so I have it. I have the language prepared for you at the end to carry it over.
So we were going to carry it over at the end, but maybe we'll just do it now.
You don't have to gavel.
I am going to carry over House Bill 3318.
Hang on, let me give you the whole list.
The other lottery bill.
Yes, pardon me, Chair Kindergarten. I just have a process question.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very happy to be serving on this committee with you. It's just a process. Question of what is the situation? I thought everything was, is there, what's going on?
Madam Chair, Representative Taylor, the paperwork was delayed through the Legislative Fiscal Office, and we sent a note to your office with the
Alrighty then.
With the details.
Okay.
Thank you.
No chance it's coming today. So we are.
That's what I was wondering. It sounds like
we're gonna. Okay, we will carry over to Friday, April 17th, the work sessions on not only that, but several bills. So House Bill 2201, House Bill 2413, House Bill 3420, House Bill 3148, and House Bill 3318.
And Madam Chair, if I may make a clarification on that, we do have public hearings scheduled for two of these bills, House Bill 2413 and House Bill 3420 for today. However, the paperwork is not in order to move the bills, so just to be clear.
Okay. So, that's where we are right now.
We are, just a moment, let me just take a look here.
We just did that one, and that's gone. Yep. Okay, I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2413. Robin, please summarize the bill.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2413 directs the Department of Human Services to report necessary changes to Legislative Assembly to implement outline goals relating to reducing need for long-term care facility bed capacity, declares emergency effective on passage. There is a dash one amendment pending, which replaces the bill and prohibits the department. The amendment prohibits the Department of Human Services from granting licenses to residential care facilities as defined unless they provide a market study on the need for services in the relevant geographic area.
Okay. Jim Carlson and Oregon Healthcare Association.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Jim Carlson. I'm the president of Oregon Healthcare Association. We're a statewide trade association that represents over 700 licensed long-term care communities around the state, as well as independent housing providers. What you have in the Dash 1 amendment is basically language clarifying existing law and statute around the submission of market studies that have to be submitted prior to the initial licensure for a new residential care facility or assisted license or assisted living facility. I helped actually draft that language back in 2008, and the intent was to have a potential licensee submit a study, but the intent was never to have that study be solely the determining factor on whether a license was or was not granted. We've recently had a case where such an interpretation was taken, and it's actually gone to a contested case hearing, and in conversations with the agency, we're in agreement on really what the intent was originally in 2008 on both the statute and on the policy, and so this amendment on Dash 1 will really just clarify that and hopefully make things very clear in the law on a go-forward basis. I'd be happy to respond to any questions. I don't believe there's any controversy or any opposition to the amendment.
And Jim, as I recall, you were saying that the reason it came late in this process is because it had just kind of come up, correct?
Yes, Madam Chair, that's correct. So we did not pre-session file this because this was an issue that actually popped up just this last fall, and kind of the problem developed in one potential license application over in the Central Oregon region, and that's actually gone to a contested case hearing. This legislation won't impact that. That contested case hearing will be ruled on. We still don't know how it's going to be ruled on, but my understanding is contested case hearings don't set a precedent in law, so even if the potential licensee prevails on that action, it doesn't necessarily clarify the law, which the Dash 1 amendment will do.
Okay. Any questions? Mr. Carlson? Okay, just a clarification of law.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Okay. Anyone else?
Yeah, I want to ask if anyone else wants to.
Would anyone else like to testify on that? If not, I'm going to close the public hearing on 2413, open a public hearing on 3420. Could you please summarize the bill, Robin?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3420 directs Housing and Community Services to establish Housing First pilot program in specified geographic areas, directs Oregon Housing and Community Services to obtain study on cost of homelessness, establishes Housing First pilot project fund and allows for funding sources outside of the general fund, appropriates unspecified funding for pilot project, declares emergency effective on passage. There is a Dash 3 amendment that replaces the bill. It defines homelessness, defines a system of care, directs Housing and Community Services to establish Housing First pilot program in specified geographic areas, directs Oregon Housing and Community Services to obtain study on cost of homelessness, establishes Housing First pilot project fund, and allows for funding sources outside of the general fund. It appropriates $2 million from the general fund for the pilot project. It declares an emergency effective on passage.
Okay, can I please have Kitty Piercy, Pat Farr, and Cheryl Ramirez?
Sorry, there's only two of us.
Okay. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Yes, please.
Okay. Good afternoon, Chair Kenny Geyer and members of the Housing and Human Services Committee. For the record, my name is Kitty Piercy, Mayor of Eugene, and I am here on behalf of my city to discuss how we can better address the needs of our community's most vulnerable persons and make better use of our limited public resources. Right now, there are over 400 long-term homeless persons in Lane County. Many suffer from mental health and substance addictions and past histories of abuse. Many also have criminal histories and multiple barriers to attaining rental housing or employment. They are unlikely to ever emerge from homelessness without a concerted effort. Leaving these persons to their own devices benefits no one and ends up costing our health, public safety, court systems, parks, business area enormous amounts of money. Research shows that when people with chronic mental health and substance abuse addictions have access to housing with supported services, they will stabilize and have fewer visits to the emergency room. There have been evidence in certain places where the cost of dealing with these folks is reduced by up to 75% by providing houses and wraparound services. While the City of Eugene and others in Lane County can contribute to the development of a pilot facility, there must be ongoing source of operating funds. Moreover, we need to find a way to create partnerships with multiple state agencies to bring together the resources and tools to implement this model throughout the state of Oregon. Because, frankly, I've heard from mayors all over the state who are grappling with this same issue. It's not unique to us. So I'm convinced that the Housing First model will save our community's resources, make better use of them, and create better outcomes for our community. So I'm asking that each of you support House Bill 3420, and I really thank you very much for this opportunity to speak with you.
Thank you, Mayor Piercy. Thank you, Madam Chair, Kenny Geyer, and to the committee. Sorry, I'm a bit nervous about this. I'm usually accustomed to being on that side of the dais. So,
Former legislator.
Both of us.
In fact, I'll point out, the first thing I'd like to say is the bill that you're looking at is not a partisan bill. It really covers whatever party you happen to be, whatever district you happen to be from. It really covers everybody in Oregon because it really addresses the cost of service to the most expensive people to provide service to. And that's people who are suffering from either addictions or from behavioral disorders that cause them to be frequent users of our public safety system and frequent users of, for instance, our emergency rooms, which we all know are very, very expensive ways to take care of issues that, if met earlier on in the cycle, can not only help people through their addiction and help people receive the services that they need more directly, it will also save money to the entire system, allowing to put our resources in other areas. I'd like to point out the district that I served when I was in the House of Representatives is the same district, in part, that Mayor Kitty Piercy served. Mm-hmm. We're from different sides of the aisle. And I'll also point out some other people, some other former representatives who served all or part of the district that Mayor Piercy and I served. I would include Larry Campbell, former Speaker of the House, would also include Ted Kulongoski, former Governor of the state, would also include the current House Majority Leader, Val Hoyle, and my wife, Debbie Farr. So it's a pretty broad mix of folks who have represented what is a very mixed district, and really this bill addresses across the board, once again, taking care of people who are the most expensive people to take care of. Housing First places people, a priority on putting people in housing in order for them to more directly access medical services and addiction services that otherwise are more difficult to address. As Mayor Piercy stated, we know from statistical evidence that costs that the cost of treatment can be reduced by as much as 70%, as was in the case of Colorado's pilot program, or more close to home, the Bud Clark Center in Portland has, we have statistics from there, showing a 50 to 55% reduction in costs of services. So this is a bill that really addresses a great many needs that every single district in the state can benefit from in terms of not only the reduction in costs, but really taking care of the people who need it the most, taking care of our frequent users of emergency services. This is a good bill. The Dash 3 amendments have revised it to include Albany and Eugene as the pilot program. This is a pilot program. What we would like to do is to be able to demonstrate that it is a system, it is a system that works and that will save money across the board. It's working in Utah very well. It's working as a pilot program in Colorado. And locally, once again, the Bud Clark Center employs in part a Housing First program. We're not asking for a change in policy at the state level at this point in time. We're asking for a pilot program to demonstrate that this is a working program. We believe that this operational money can help us to put people in beds and be able to show that money will be saved, lives will be saved, and a great deal of costly services will be able to be redirected. And I am available, both the mayor and I are available for questions, should you have any.
Thanks, Chair Kindergeyer. I'm just curious, what's the length of time for the pilot program?
There is no fixed length of time on it.
I think what we were, as I understand it, I think it was talking about 2 years. We think there's going to be some amendments to lengthen the time, because I think it'll, if you can invest that much, you want to give it enough time to
right.
to work. So we'll be back with you with some additional thoughts on that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And if I may follow up, sure. Madam Chair. In order to make the program most effective, a little bit of time is going to be needed to set up the program initially, both in Eugene and in Albany. And you know, Albany does a great job of taking care of their homeless population. Mayor of Albany has submitted a letter, and I'd like to restate, she has some concerns that we are aware of, that we are interested in addressing, but that Albany and Eugene both have a different type of homeless situation. Albany does a very good job of addressing it. Eugene, because of the circumstances in Eugene, we tend to have a relatively diverse homeless population. It's for instance, we have a former rail yard in Eugene, so some homelessness came through Travelers of the Rails. Some homeless came from remnants of the 1960s and 70s, people tell me. So it's, you know, Eugene is kind of a nexus. So it's, it really, between Albany and Eugene, we're going to be able to provide a pilot program that really will demonstrate effectiveness mm-hmm. over the course of maybe 2 years, but probably somewhat longer.
Follow up on that?
Yes.
Chair Kindergeyer, thank you. I agree so much on everything you've said, that it is not a one-size-fits-all. And I represent Gresham, and our situation is far different than Eugene and Albany, mm-hmm. so I really appreciate that that thought has gone into that. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate the comments about the length of time. We do these things sometimes too short.
Right.
And to see that where the true impact. So I just appreciate it. I support the bill. I think it's great.
Thank you.
Other questions? Representative Gallegos.
Yeah, I'm just curious. How is this different than other housing initiatives in some of the other cities in Oregon? I mean, particularly, I'm thinking that as a pilot, when I think of a pilot project, it's a smaller sample project that we're using to gain information to see if it works. And
but I would tell you, Representative Gallagher, is that in most places right now, you have to be clean before you can get into a program. And the people that we're really talking about that are the most costly, we think we can get them to be, to better address their issues if they're in housing. So this is a very different model than you see in many places in the state, and there's evidence all over the country that this works, and we think we should be trying it too, because as we've stated, these folks are expensive to our community and to our state, and if there's a chance that we can help them and save a lot of resources for our state and for our communities, then I think it's upon us to try it out.
So how are you going to assess, evaluate, report sort of your findings, if you will?
Mm-hmm. If I may, the Dash 3 amendments include a study by an institute of higher learning to actually report not only the progress that's made with the individuals who are being served, but how that compares with individuals in similar situations, in similar addiction or behavioral health situations of, who are not being served through that system. So we'll be able to demonstrate the test subject versus the newly served subject.
I think I may have missed just the last part of your question there, but is it different from the Bud Commons project?
The upper floor of the Bud Clark Commons has a housing first element to it. The Bud Clark Commons has a broader range of services than just residential services. They have day use services also, so it's similar in that actively using addicts are being served in the facility. It's very similar in that respect. So some of the statistics drawn from Bud Clark are applicable to the pilot program that we're prescribing, mm-hmm. or that we're recommending and hoping for. So, however, it goes beyond Bud Clark in that it is specifically and only for housing people who, in order for them to be in a fixed living environment where they can more directly and uniformly receive the services. And uniformly is a really important element. If we're serving people, addicts who are on the street, you never can quite pin down where they're going to be to receive the service. Mm-hmm. The first thing, having them in a location where we know they're living, where we know their address, is going to it's not only going to save money in the long run, it's also going to be more effective at mm-hmm. serving the individual addicts. Mm-hmm. Bud Clark does the same thing, but mm-hmm. in a slightly different fashion.
I think in many places in Oregon, people have been using sort of pieces of a housing first approach, but we haven't figured out as a state if this is a direction mm-hmm. that we really want to go. And so what we're trying to do through this is not only improve our situations, but to demonstrate and mm-hmm. allow you to see evidence that can maybe lead for us addressing this better in a more uniform manner throughout the state for all of our communities mm-hmm. with their differences. So,
exactly. Yeah. Don't they call this like wet housing versus dry
yeah.
housing?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. That's correct.
Okay.
And okay. Madam Chair, if I may just add one thing. In Lane County, we have a Poverty and Homelessness Board. Mm-hmm. It's in response to a requirement by HUD. But we have on that board, Mayor Piercy and I are both on the board, mm-hmm. as is the House Majority Leader Val Hoyle sits on that board also. Currently, since you're in session, she has a representative replacing her. But what we've determined through that board is that we're able to once again more deeply address the very specific needs of this very expensive group of individuals, mm-hmm. and once again not just save money but save lives.
Mm-hmm. Great, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Cheryl Ramirez? And is there anyone else on this bill? Nope. Yes, one more. Do you want her to sign?
No, she just can state her name for the record.
Oh, okay. No, she wants to come up as well.
I'm just saying all she needs to do is stay here for the record.
Okay. Good afternoon, Chair Kenny Geyer, members of the committee. I am Cheryl Ramirez from the Association of Oregon Community Mental Health Programs, and I'm here on behalf of the Community Mental Health Program Directors in support of House Bill 3420. We believe very strongly in the concept of housing first and then allowing participants the opportunity to focus on recovery next. So as you mentioned, Representative Kenny Geyer, wet housing, that's really
a good description of this. We believe that stable housing is really important for people with mental health and substance use disorders to recover, and we don't believe that they can be expected to really succeed without a safe and secure home. So, we're really in favor of this concept. We also believe that it reduces costs in other systems, for example, inpatient hospitalization, prisons and jails, shelters, if they have permanent supportive housing. I have a few statistics. I know you mentioned something about outcomes. Our colleagues in Salt Lake County have been very successful with Housing First. They began their program in 2005. Overall, they have an 80% retention rate. 10% moved on to other stable settings, and they had 6% eviction. Also, for the justice-involved population, they experienced a 49% decline in total bookings, a 48% decline in new charge bookings, and a total length of stay in jail reduced by 65%, and a length of stay for new charge bookings decreased by 70%. So they've come up with some really good outcomes in Salt Lake County since they started Housing First. And then third, I would just like to add that supported housing includes appropriate mental health and addiction services. That's very important for people in supported housing environments for their treatment to be successful. And so those other services that are listed in the bill, for example, crisis stabilization services, must also be adequately funded to go along with Housing First. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Greetings, Lorna Walker. As I was listening to the amendment being read, and I apologize, I don't have it in front of me, so I can't quote specifically, but the thought that occurred to me is, as this pilot is being developed, there needs to be inclusion in some facet in it, that there is an identification of what the measure of success is, and possibly eventually prioritization, and that additionally those measures of success need to be compared across different pilot scenarios to identify whether the measures are consistent throughout the various locations and different circumstances, or whether there are significant variables, and how those variables and consistent measures need to be lined up in order to plan ahead into future pilots or actual administration, how to fund, how to distribute resources, what needs to be changed in order to make the pilots more effective. And I don't know whether that's something that needs to be included in an amendment or just tucked in there someplace along the way. Thank you.
Thank you. And for the record, are you speaking on behalf of an organization or associated with any organization?
I'm an interested citizen.
Okay. All right. Great. Thank you. Are there any questions for either?
Yep.
Representative Hayden.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair Kinnegar. Very important subject, particularly in Lane County, but I live close to there, so I'm aware of the concern. One of the things with working with the Oregon Health Authority, particularly Lynn Saxon, has testified in other committees that they are, one of their main goals is to map the services, not only what is physically available in the state of Oregon, but the funding sources, so that they can get a grasp on what services are there and hopefully connect people with the existing services. I understand that that won't be completed for a while, but I think it is a high priority. How will this tie into that? Are you having communication with them, or how is that tied together?
Representative Hayden, Chair Kinnegar, I believe AMH is very supportive of this type of housing. It helps people recover, and it's within their strategic plan of increasing housing supports for people with mental health issues and addictions. I know that housing, actually in Ways and Means today, they spend a lot of time on the need for more housing. So this is well, in my opinion, well within the housing needs that are out there. I mean, I think all communities need more housing developments and at all levels. This is, as mentioned before, this is a particular type of housing for people who cannot be clean and sober at the beginning of their treatment. And so they would be able to stay there even though they may still be using. So it's a particular need.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, any other questions? Thank you very much. I'm going to close the public hearing on 2413. I'm sorry, I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 3420.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, all the rest of this is done.
So I also want to recognize that Representative Bueller's bill, and I'm forgetting the number, on recording fees, was moved to Monday. I'm not sure why did we not say that here.
Because it wasn't carried over. It was moved.
It was moved, not carry over, if you're wondering why. So just trying to clarify the process for myself here. Thank you, everyone. We got out sooner than I thought we would. We don't expect that because a lot of things kind of keep getting bumped over. I'm hoping that you'll hold Monday until 6 o'clock, just in case. We need the extra time. Just don't plan anything else. I know that the Health Committee is holding between 7 and 9, I think, that evening. So that gives you guys who are on the Health Committee with me a break to go eat if needed. We will certainly try not to use that time, but if we get really crunched, we don't want bills to die. Yeah, maybe we'll bring pizza. I do want to just say, in closing, I want to again thank Representative Bueller for staying in touch with me on the tax credit conversation. You or your staff kind of kept in constant touch and gave feedback. I really appreciate that. I also really want to call out Chris Alanak, and I'm sorry I didn't do that earlier, but he slipped out. He was just absolutely incredible in this process. He's working on so many tax credits and constantly responded to me on weekends and 2 o'clock in the morning. He ended up in the hospital at one point and wasn't at one of our hearings, and I hope that I had no part in that, but he really went beyond the call of duty. He's done an incredible job. So when you see him again, thank him for his work on this. Thank you again to all the advocates who were part of that. And thank you to my committee. We are adjourned.
Friday or no?
We do meet. We adjourned.
Friday or no?